now tuned to the CWA Civil Rights Talk Show, an hour of power. Now here's your host, Errol Miner.
Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA. Human Rights Hour Power, Justice Field Hour Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us home with you on KYOKradio.org. You can also listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast player by going to Apple Podcasts, CWA Strong App, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Or search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for joining us this morning on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show. It's about us. That's right. It's about us. Working agreements, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with you this morning with Makia, Reginald, Timia, and Tay. So don't you dare change that dial. We'll be talking about seasonal affected disorder awareness month. Sad. Gender justice, the CWA way, facts versus fiction. Union Buster of the Week, and Women in Power in the Union. So don't you dare change that dial. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 24 months striking on the picket lines. And yet, while they are out striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/ppg-donate? Why? Because when we fight, we win. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Nikki Giovanni, a champion for human rights. Nikki Giovanni is one of the most iconic figures in contemporary American literature and activism. Throughout her career, she has used her voice as a poet, educator, and public intellectual to challenge racial inequality, sexism, and other forms of social injustices. Giovanni's work reflects her fierce commitment to Black identity, civil rights, and human dignity, while also focusing on the intersectionality of race, gender, and class. Her poetry, essays, and public speeches have contributed significantly to the fight for social change, empowerment, and human rights, making her one of the leading figures in the civil rights movement and beyond. Nikki Giovanni was born on June 7, 1943, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Raised in a relatively affluent family, Giovanni experienced both the privileges and the pressures that came with being a Black woman in America. Her parents, both strong advocates for education, instilled in her the importance of learning, expression, and empowerment. Giovanni attended Fisk University, a historically Black college in Nashville, Tennessee, where she earned her a degree in history. Her experiences at Fisk University, which was active in the civil rights movement, deeply influenced her views on race and justice. After completing her degree, Giovanni moved to New York, where she continued her studies and developed her voice as a writer. Over time, she would blend her academic and artistic pursuits, becoming an influential figure in the literary world and a powerful spokesperson for the civil rights and the feminist movements. Giovanni's writing is characterized by its unapologetic exploration of racial and gender identity. Her first major collection of poetry, Black Feeling, Black Talk, in 1967, was groundbreaking in its blunt portrayal of the emotional struggles and resilience of Black people in America. Giovanni's poems spoke directly to the lived experiences of African Americans, challenging societal structures that oppressed Black communities. Her second major collection, Black Judgment, in 1968, was published during a time when the Black Power movement was gaining momentum. Giovanni's poetry of this period reflected the movement's desire for pride, self-determination, and the radical reshaping of American society. Her words were a direct response to the cultural climate of the time, one that saw the rise of both Black nationalism and an increasingly vocal feminist movement. Throughout her career, Giovanni's poetry collections, such as Love Poems, 1970, Ego Tripping and Other Poems for Young People, 1973, Revolutionary Petunias and Other Poems, 1973, and The Women and the Men in 1975, have continued to inspire readers with their rich lyrical expressions of Black love, empowerment, and resistance to oppression. Her poem, Ego Tripping, one of her most famous works, is a powerful celebration of African-American heritage and the strength of Black women. In it, Giovanni writes of Black women's beauty, intelligence, and resilience, offering a bold counterpart to the prevailing negative stereotypes of Blackness that were prevalent during her youth. In addition to poetry, Giovanni has also established essays, children's books, and collections of public speeches. Her 1976 essay, The Longest Distance Between Two People Is a Good Book, remains a poignant reflection of the role of literature in fostering understanding across cultural boundaries. As an advocate for education, Giovanni has spent much of her career teaching at universities, including a long tenure at Virginia Tech, where she served as a professor in the English department. Nika Giovanni's most profound contribution to human rights has been through her unwavering support for racial equality and justice. She came of age during the civil rights movement, and her work has always been deeply interwoven with the fight for racial equality in America. From her early days as an activist to her mature reflective writing, Giovanni has continually used her platform to highlight issues of racial injustice, especially in relation to the African-American experience. Giovanni's poetry is filled with themes of Black pride, empowerment, and resistance to systemic racism. Through her poetic voice, she encouraged her readers to understand the value of their heritage and to push back against the oppressive forces in society. For Giovanni, the personal was always political. In poems like Nikki Rosa, she explored the complexities of a being Black person in America, addressing the systemic struggles faced by Black communities, but also celebrating the richness of Black life, love, and history. As a feminist, Giovanni was one of the early voices to address the intersection of race and gender. She highlighted how Black women were doubly oppressed by both sexism and racism. Giovanni's work has consistently explored the challenges that Black women face in American society, as well as their strength, resilience, and power. Her writing challenges the patriarchal structures that subjugate women, especially Black women, as she has used her art to call for a more inclusive and equitable world for all women. In poems like Woman, Giovanni emphasizes the importance of women's autonomy and agency, while also acknowledging the pain and struggle that women face in their daily lives. Giovanni's feminism is rooted in a deep commitment to intersectionality, understanding that struggles for gender equality cannot be separated from struggles for racial justice. Giovanni has also been a vocal supporter of LGBTQIA+ rights. She has also advocated for the acceptance and inclusion of all people, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. She has spoken publicly about her belief in the inherent dignity of every human being and has used her platform to encourage the LGBTQIA+ community to embrace their truth and seek justice. Giovanni's openness in her own life about matters of sexuality and love serves as a beacon of acceptance for marginalized communities. Throughout her career as an educator, Giovanni has worked tirelessly to improve educational opportunities for underprivileged communities. She has emphasized the importance of education in overcoming the barriers of racism, classism, and sexism, and has often spoken about the transformative power of literacy and learning. Giovanni's commitment to social justice extends beyond her artistic contributions. She has been an advocate for programs that empower young people, especially in disadvantaged communities, to pursue education and creative expression as tools for social change. As a professor, Giovanni has taught students to not only embrace their intellectual potential, but also to understand the role of art and activism in fostering change. She has been an inspiration to countless students, encouraging them to use their talents to improve the world around them. Nikki Giovanni's contributions to human rights have left an indelible mark on American culture and history. Her activism, advocacy for racial justice, feminist ideals, and commitment to education have made her a role model for generations of writers, activists, and educators. Giovanni's work continues to inspire readers around the world to fight for equality and to embrace their cultural heritage with pride and determination. Nikki Giovanni remains an active figure in American literature and activism, and she uses her voice in contemporary issues of race, gender, and social justice. Her impact is immeasurable as her words continue to inspire and call for action in the face of injustice. Nikki Giovanni passed away on December 9th, 2024, at the age of 81. We salute Nikki Giovanni. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on KYOKradio.org. You can listen to and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast player, CWA Strong app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser, or simply search CWA Our of Power on your favorite podcast player. Up next, we have Makia Jones with Seasonal Affective Disorder Awareness Month. Good morning, Makia.
Good morning, and good morning, KYOK radio listeners. Now, I was supposed to talk about seasonal awareness disorder, but I'm going to throw an audible and I'm going to change it up a little bit because this month is Human Rights Awareness Month. And you know, Errol, I didn't know that you were going to talk about Nikki Giovanni today, and I'm glad that you did, because one of my favorite poems by her is the Rosa Parks. And at the end of the poem, she says, "We're coming to sit with you, Rosa Parks. People black and white did say, we're coming to change America and bring equality here to stay." And I think that's something really important and something that we should remember and consider, because again, this month, December, is Universal Human Rights Month. And today I'm going to talk about something incredibly important. And every December, people across the United States and around the world come together to celebrate and reflect on the basic rights that should be granted to every person, regardless of their race, religion, gender, political views, or economic status. It's a time to celebrate human rights and reaffirm the dignity of all people. Human rights defines the freedoms and protections that all individuals are entitled to simply because they are human. And these rights include the right to freedom, the right to be free from enslavement, fear, harassment, and discrimination, and the right to life, liberty, and personal security. But why do we celebrate Universal Human Rights Month? It's because on December 10th, 1948, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And in the first article of this document, it states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. It reminds us that we are all endowed with reason and conscience and should treat each other in a spirit of brotherhood. Now, although the Universal Declaration of Human Rights isn't legally binding, it has inspired over 60 international human rights agreements that set standards for how we should treat each other across the world. And today, It is widely accepted by all the United Nations member states, and it reinforces the importance of human rights in our everyday lives. This year's theme for Human Rights Month is Our Rights, Our Future, Right Now. It reminds us that human rights empowers individuals and communities to create a better tomorrow. And by embracing and trusting in the power of human rights, we can work towards a more peaceful, equal, and sustainable world. As UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has said, human rights are the foundation for peaceful, just, and inclusive societies. This theme also encourages us to reflect on how human rights are the path to solutions. They act as a protective, preventative, and transformative force for good. And in today's world, it's more important than ever to speak out against hate speech, correct misinformation, and stand up for what's right. One of the most significant actions we can take during Human Rights Month and beyond is to find common ground with the people around us. And we must remember that people of different cultures, backgrounds, and beliefs are still human. We should avoid the trap of dividing ourselves from others and instead take the time to learn about a culture different from our own. Embrace those differences because by learning about and standing up for others, we promote equality, justice, and freedom. So this month and every month, let's encourage each other to come together and stand up for one another. This is the time to reaffirm our commitment to human rights for everyone everywhere. And I encourage all of you to take the time to read the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and reflect on how it impacts your own life and how you move throughout this world. Let's keep the spirit of human rights alive, not just this month, but throughout the year. So thank you for tuning in and listening to us for this past 10 months. And I hope you have a wonderful Universal Human Rights Month. Happy belated Human Rights Day, which was 2 days ago on December 10th, and happy holidays. Back to you, Errol.
Thank you so much, Maikia. You are listening to CWA Our Power Hour on KYLK 1140 AM and the all new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Good morning, Sir Reginald Small. I hear you have something wonderful to talk to us about today. That's called gender justice, the CWA way, facts versus fiction.
Morning, Errol Minor, and good morning to my KYOK radio listeners. And yes, Errol, I'm always excited when I have the opportunity to talk a little bit about this exciting course, this training that we have created within CWA Human Rights Department called Gender Justice. And of course, when you hear that, of course, we automatically know that there are injustices still going on today as it relates to gender. So, Errol, I believe we're going to have a joint conversation today because you too are a part of this gender justice movement that we have created within CWA. And I believe Tamia as well is going to be many. But I'm always excited because this class is so unique and we have the opportunity to do this class, do training with our CWA members all over the country. I'll just get into it a little bit and you all can jump in anywhere that you want. And if I get too excited and I don't stop at periods or exclamation points, just please interrupt me.
No, we're going to let you have it.
Are you going to let me have it? Okay. So this class is broken down. I like to think of it in four basic segments here. When we open the class, of course, we definitely have our training goals. And one of them is definitely to develop an understanding of gender bias, patriarchy, and homophobia in the workplace and in labor history. And we always want to explore and take a look at ourselves because this class is not about sitting in a room and then you get some information and you go out and point at others. This class is developed so that we as activists can take a closer look at ourselves. When we open the class, Errol, as you know, we talk about what sex is versus gender. And sex, in the most basic sense, once we lay that foundation with an understanding, and most people, you automatically assume that you know what sex is versus gender. But for this particular class, we spend a little time talking about sex as we know it, is the basic concept. A baby is born, the doctor slaps it on the butt, gets the fresh breath of air, flips it over and identifies it as whether it's male, female, or intersex. That is what we're talking about, sex in its most basic form. And then when we switch over to gender, gender is one's own expression, a one's own feeling or perception of self, the innermost concept of self. We stop there just a minute because gender, again, is one's most innermost concept of sex, of self. So there we've talked about sex, we've talked about gender, and then we go into the third category, sexual orientation. Keeping in mind all three things, sex versus gender versus sexual orientation, those are all three separate things. And we actually spend some quite a bit of time talking about terminologies, terminologies within the LGBTQIA plus community. We talk about terminologies as it relates to gender. We give a basic understanding of that. And the what I really love about the class is that it creates a safe space to talk about subjects that people often have questions about, but because of our kindness and politeness, we don't want to ask these questions because we're careful we don't want to offend our sisters or, and brothers or our union siblings. So this creates that opportunity at the beginning of the class to actually ask questions and gain a better perspective of those terms and the differences. And then we go into pronouns. Pronouns are a pretty big deal. They haven't always been a big deal, but pronouns can be a big deal because pronouns are just a sign of respect. And most of us, if we've gone to the eighth grade, we understand pronouns in the sense of putting it in a sentence structure. But pronouns don't always have to be about gender. But for this particular class, pronouns are about gender. We talk about some of the most basic pronouns, he, him, his, she, her, hers, they, and them. So those are some of the most basic pronouns that we use for this particular class. That is not an all-inclusive list, of course, as we know, but those are some of the basic pronouns. We talk about pronouns and some of the most common things that we get in the class. And as I talk about this, not just in the class, but as an activist, we talk about these things no matter what situation we're in. Most people say, well, you know, I just can't learn that. That's just too much for me. It's just too much. It's confusing. So, and I get that a lot. But the way around that is always rely upon a name. If you get confused, pronouns are not intended to become a thing. It's not supposed to be something that stumps you up, or if you're corrected, if I tell you that my pronoun is he and him and you mix it up, or if I say that I go by they, then you get stumped with that and I correct you. I don't want you to get tangled up with it. You should not get stuck with that. Rely upon the name. So just remember that my name is Reginald. So if you can't get pronouns in your head, you can get a name in the head. And there is nothing offensive about asking me my name again. If you don't know my name, what do, Errol? You ask me again. So just ask me my name. So then we talk a little bit about misgendering and how misgendering can happen just accidentally. But it can also be intentionally. And when it's intentional, that's when it becomes a problem, and respect is a big factor there. If you want to respect your coworker, your friend, your neighbor, your union member, and they have told you what their pronoun is, it is very simple. It is not up to you to decide what the pronoun is. Out of respect for your neighbor, your coworker, your union member, your church member, use their pronoun or their name. Either one is fine. And so, of course, you can't have a class like this without talking about bias, our biases. We all have them. And in this class, we talk about the implicit bias. And as a general understanding, implicit bias are those immediate judgments, those immediate thoughts that we have about people or about situations or about things. I walk into a room. You look at me, you think something automatically. Your brain is just programmed that way. That's implicit bias. That's the immediate judgment, immediate thought that you have. They're not bad things to have. It's just that when you don't control it, I always look at it like a bad temper. If you have a temper, as we walk in age, grace, and wisdom, we learn to control that. It may still rise up inside of you, but it's what you do with that and how you let that temper control you, or you control the temper. So we talk about bias and the different kinds of biases that we have. And we clearly point out that we all have them. This class is an interactive class. It is built so that it is constructed so that we can all take a deeper look and become comfortable with questioning and challenging our own biases. It's a wonderful class, Erlyn. As you can see, I can chat about it for a very long time. And of course, we wonder, where do these biases come from? They come from how we were raised, how we were conditioned, what friends we have, what community that we were raised in, our cultural differences. All of these help form us. I mean, we are all formed somewhere. So therefore, we all have these biases in the way that we think. And then we shift over to the patriarchy, and what is patriarchy, and how it intersects with our biases. Patriarchy, of course, is a social system where basically men have authority and power over women. Now, whether you agree with that concept or not, patriarchy does exist, and it is embedded in our systems, in our institutions. It's embedded in us, and it derives from a Greek word, which I wouldn't even dare try to pronounce, but it means the rule of men. And every household, generally, not, I mean, there are some exceptions to that, and I won't debate or argue the exceptions, but every person has something in their head or has been affected or conditioned by the patriarchal system. Personally, I know I had it because my mother, and my grown up, my mother would say to us if we acted out and she couldn't handle it, she says, "Wait till your daddy gets home. I'm going to tell your dad when he gets home." So that means that he had the ultimate say. And I don't know why she did that, because everyone knew that he was much more gentle than she was. But anyway, she would say that to us, which means that your daddy ruled this house, and when he gets home, he will set it in order. So that was one form of patriarchy. So why do we talk about these things in union, particularly in union? In this particular training that we at CWA saw a need to implement, union is about collective power. And if we don't understand the differences in people and why we are the way we are, collective power is out the window. So, in establishing collective power and stronger collective power, we wanted to tackle these issues and talk about them again in a safe space so that our union members could be comfortable, our union members could embrace each other, and walk in the true sense of unity. And I believe that this class, I strongly believe that this class has done that. You can also take this very same information, because we're not just union members and activists by day. You go home, you go to a community, you're running a house, you're running other organizations. This information can be used anywhere and everywhere. So, Errol, I just think this is a wonderful, wonderful class. It's a wonderful opportunity. If you're ever able to have this class, or if you want this class and you're listening, you may contact our Human Rights Department and we can send more information on it. And I think we can get the ball rolling.
Absolutely. I just want to jump in there real quick. When you start talking about bias, our bias are like a fundamental, it goes back to our being and how we survived.
through being cavemen, what have you, how we survive, because our bias are rooted in our fears and what we fear and what in the unknown. It's just like another thing that we get our biases from is from the media. How many of us were afraid of sharks from watching the movie Jaws? The movie Jaws had the whole nation in a chokehold because we all thought we were going to go to the beach and get bitten by a shark. That is a bias. We had a bias through sharks. And a lot of sharks lost their lives during that time because people were afraid of them and people started hunting them and they started killing them. And that's something that unfortunately our biases have been portrayed onto people when we have biases and we're afraid of people. And I'm going to toss the mic to anybody else who wants to speak.
And I just want to add in. So, by being able to not only take the training first and learn from my peers, and then being able to give the training, a lot of what I notice is sometimes we are so afraid to admit that we have those biases. When we talk about them and we highlight them, there's so many people who just kind of get quiet because when you get in front of other people and we actually explain what bias looks like, you're like, oh, I walk into the grocery store and I show my bias, or I walk into this place and I show, but you don't know you have these things in you because we grew up this way, or this is just normal for us to think this of another person. But this is the opportunity to learn something and take it back and teach someone else something. So everyone has that bias, whether you want to admit it or not, it's there in you. And I had to learn that too. I was one of those people. I don't have no bias. My family taught me that, we all look the same. I got in the class and I was like, ooh, y'all, I got a little more bias than I thought. So I think it's important to kind of, know what that looks like before you actually get in and be like, nope, I don't have this issue. Or I'm not biased, and not saying it's an issue, but I'm not biased at all. You have to actually know what that looks like before you can say that. And again, all of us have it, whether you wanted to admit it or not.
You're absolutely correct. We all have biases, and I think all of us can relate to when we're running late to catch our plane, and they're just and they just said, go ahead and sit wherever you want to sit, and then you have a seat that you might be uncomfortable. So all of us have those biases. But one thing that I have discovered in teaching this class and in taking this class was that gender justice is ever evolving. And every, even at work, in life itself, when you're out in public, you come across those teachings that we have learned about from the teachings of Mr. Small when he came to teach the class. And one of the things that we just got through dealing with or coming to mind right now was how, if someone can't say your name, they just give you a name. For example, in the gender justice classes, imagine your name is Elizabeth, but then someone says, no, you don't look like an Elizabeth. I'm going to call you Sarah. That's disrespectful. Whatever my name is, that's what you call me. Take the time to learn how to pronounce. One of the worst things that I hate, I only have two consonants in my name. But how do you get L out of arrow? I mean,
Or Tamika
or Michaela out of IKEA. But let me just tell you, I spent about half my life, and you know what, Tay, we're not even gonna go there because
I was gonna say,
I don't
I'm gonna back out of this one. Just leave.
know where coming off mute.
But you know what, Tay, even when we first were introduced to each other and you came in, and I think it was Yolanda that introduced you to us, and she said your name, I was like, I will mess that name up. But I took the time to learn how to pronounce Tequesion. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did. And I
See, that's what
appreciate
I'm saying. So we have to take the time to learn how to pronounce someone's name. It is a level of respect.
When and that's what I'll talk about. A long time, that's what it was for me, is I didn't ever want anyone to not get my name right. So I always kind of just left it and I let people say whatever. But this training too, it's taught me. No, you correct them every single time. You say it right every single time. And I've learned that through one of the trainers. Again, like I said, I took the class, and that's what she explained, is when someone misgenders you, you need to correct them every single time. I don't mean to offend anyone, but I don't want to be offended either. So if you care about the people around you, you're going to take your time to learn these things. And I learned that as well. Again, like I said, you got to take these trainings to understand a lot of what's going on first. And I appreciate that I was able to be in the room and not be the trainer for once, so I can understand every view around me. And it was a beautiful thing to see the older generation and the new generation answer questions back and forth. It was an interactive training. So yeah, we give you a lot of information, but it's the connections that you have in these trainings that are the most valuable. To hear people who've experienced certain things and who've gone through something you've never gone through, but to think, did I have part in hurting someone? Did I have part in disrespecting someone? It's a beautiful thing to learn how we can correct these things. And this gender justice training is valuable, is very, very valuable. And I'm just grateful that I even was able to be in that training. So if you have not taken it, if you don't know anything about it, you should definitely look into more information about it. It's a great training.
And I know we're supposed to wrap this segment up, but I just wanted to just piggyback off what Tay said when she said, did I hurt someone or did I take part in that? And I think that that's something that we don't acknowledge enough as human beings when we move throughout this world, right? Is that we just live our lives only worrying about our own feelings and protecting our own feelings or those that are closest to us. So we never take the time to consider, did I have a part or, did I take part in harming someone else? And I think as activists and as people and as human rights workers and as just union workers and as beings, we have to just minimize harm. There's a lot going on in this world, and I think it's super important for us to try to minimize the harm that we're putting out there. And that's all I needed to say.
And I'm telling you right now, I have people texting me about their names of how people get it wrong and want to call them what they want to call. My text messages are just going off. And I believe people are really enjoying this information tonight. I mean, today. So that means that gender justice trainings are going on all over the country. First quarter of 2025. That means that every local across the nation should be reaching out to your human rights department and scheduling trainers in every district across the nation. And if
And
you
again, remember too that our trainings aren't just specific to CWA members. Or, if you are from a different union or a community center or a church or whatever, and you feel like that this training would be impactful for you and helpful to you all, you can reach out to us too. And we'll be more than happy to come there and do a training there too, because this is the work for all of us, right? It's not just
Right.
specific to labor unions. This is something that we all need to work on as human beings. So if you can call in now, be nice when you do it, but call in and let us know and talk about it, and we'll try to set something up.
Right. And I'm glad you said something about that, because I've already given permission for some churches or organizations in Florida to come in January when I travel down there. So we're all excited about the gender justice training and the implicit bias trainings that will be going all being taught all over the country in the first quarter of 2025. All right, Reginald Small, our hat is off to you. You did a great job this morning. Anything else, sir?
Nothing else. I have lots more, but we'll save it for another day. Thank you,
And
Harold Miner.
it's lovely to have you back. We've missed you for the past 6 months. It's lovely to see you back at work on this fine Thursday.
Exactly. We glad that you still remain Reginald Small.
I still remain Reginald Small, and I'm just glad, mighty glad to be here.
That's right. He has been out there just leaving us hanging. Thank you so much,
Doing
Reggie.
work.
I know. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. Turn the volume up just a little bit louder to hear Miss Timia Wiley. What do you have for us this morning, Timia?
Today, I got a little bit of a twist on our Union Buster of the Week. So, good morning, listeners. Good morning, unionists. Good morning, family. Good morning, saints. And good morning, aints. Today, we're talking about something that affects all of us, but often goes unnoticed: the vital role of labor unions in advocating for workers who serve our communities. It's a topic that has a direct impact on families, social services, and the future of our state's workforce. A new report from us at CWA and the New Jersey Policy Perspective has brought a major issue to light. Declining staffing and increasing caseloads are seriously impacting the ability of social service workers to assist in New Jersey residents in need. And this is not just happening in New Jersey, this is something that's going on all across the United States. The report is titled "Understaffed and Underfunded: Barriers to Effective Anti-Poverty Assistance." It sheds light on the strain facing social service employees across every state. The numbers are eye-opening. Between 2019 and 2023, nearly 600 CWA members working in social services were surveyed across multiple agencies. The findings are clear. Staffing levels have decreased by 3%, while caseloads have surged by a staggering 32%. So the staffing levels are down by 3%, but caseloads have surged by 32%. So what does that mean in practical terms? It means that workers are struggling to keep up with the demand, and families are in need or having to wait longer, sometimes much longer, to receive vital benefits. Taniqua Mullen, chair of CWA Welfare Council at CWA Local 1084, had this to say: "Our agency primarily services low-income families and is designed to assist with their financial struggles. But the reality is, we're not being provided with the resources or the staff to do the job effectively. Understaffing is causing significant delays in getting anti-poverty assistance to those who need it most." Taniqua Mullen, a CWA leader and social services worker, speaks from experience. Her message is clear. Workers are dedicated to helping families, but without adequate staffing and resources, they're simply unable to do their jobs in a timely manner. And this is not just a problem for workers. It's a problem for all of us. When families can't get the support they need, it creates a ripple effect across entire communities. Delays in food assistance, healthcare coverage, and financial aid for low-income families can mean increased hardships for the most vulnerable in our society. But here's where labor unions come in. Unlike CWA, unions like CWA are not just fighting for better wages and benefits, they're fighting for the quality of services that we all rely on. Stephen Hernandez shared this: "I became a social service employee to help people, to get them the same support I relied on when I served our country. But over the years, low pay and understaffing have caused a lot of stress. It's hard to give people the help they need when you're overwhelmed. Luckily, at Ocean County, we were able to negotiate a contract that raised starting pay and brought in new staff. That made a huge difference. But this needs to happen statewide. Our communities deserve well-paid, well-supported workers who can do the job they were hired to do." Stephen Hernandez, a social service worker and CWA member, knows firsthand the importance of fair pay and proper staffing. Thanks to a recent contract negotiation, his agency was able to hire 60 new employees. And step it, that's a huge step in the right direction. But Stephen is quick to point out that this should be the norm, not the exception. And he's right. This should be the norm where these agencies are able to hire and retain because they're able to pay a living wage starting off. Communities need fully staffed social service agencies, and workers need to be fairly compensated for the important work that they do. This is very important work. It's not just about better pay, it's about giving these workers the time, resources, and support they need to serve those in our communities who are struggling the most. The crisis facing social services isn't just an issue in New Jersey, as we said. It's happening all across the country. But labor unions like CWA are pushing back, fighting for the workers who help our most vulnerable populations and demanding that the state and local governments prioritize staffing and funding for these critical services. As Taniqua Mullen stated, we fight for our workers. We're fighting for the community. It's all connected. When social service workers are supported, families get the support they need, and that makes us all stronger. That, my friends, is the essence of labor solidarity. Workers standing together to demand better conditions for themselves and for people they serve. It's a fight for justice, for fair pay, for the well-being of every person in the community. It is a reminder that the strength of our communities depends on the workers who support them. So, as I close out today's show on the Union Buster, remember this. When workers unite, they don't just improve their own lives, they improve the lives of everyone around them. And in this case, social workers, the social service workers, that means helping to lift up families out of poverty, ensuring that every person has access to the support they need, and creating a fairer, more just society for all. So, with all of that in mind, let me ask you all this. Do you think there are employers nationwide who try to bust unions among social service workers? I'll let you decide for yourself. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Please stay informed, stay engaged, and remember that there is solidarity in strength. And I'll see you next week on our next segment of Union Buster of the Week. Errol, back to you.
Thank you so much, Timmy. You are listening to CWA Hour Power Hour on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Hey, Rich, listen, I want to go back to something because I know you did the part on gender justice and everything, and then you start talking about patriarchy because all of that is a part of gender justice. So I just want to talk for a few moments on women in power in the union. Makia gave me this, and when she gave me this, I started doing a little research, and I think it's very powerful that we start looking at women in power in the union. When I was doing the research, I realized that there was a need for women in leadership positions within unions, and it's critical for fostering inclusivity for addressing gender-specific workplace issues and strengthening the overall labor movement. And here are some key reasons to why women in power in unions are essential. Number one, representation and advocacy. Women make up a significant portion of the workforce, particularly in sectors like healthcare, education, and service industries. And having women in union leadership ensures that policies and negotiations address issues that disproportionately affect women, such as wage gaps. And we have our pay guru right here on the radio show with us every Thursday, Makia Jones. Parental leave, harassment protections, and flexible work arrangements. And I really think that female leaders can better understand and prioritize workplace issues that are unique to women, such as access to childcare, pregnancy accommodations, and equitable opportunities for advancement. Not only is there representation and advocacy, women in power in the union are needed, but it also strengthens unions through diversity. Studies have also shown that diverse leadership teams lead to better decision-making and more innovative problem-solving. Women leaders in unions bring varied perspectives and approaches, enhancing the ability of unions to connect with and mobilize members from all demographics. It also gives an increased representation of women, encourages greater union membership and engagement among women workers who may feel more confident in advocating for their rights when they see relatable leaders. And I know many of us have heard back in the day, if you will, behind every good man is a good woman. But it's not behind every good man, it's beside. And in today's times, it can be before. We need women in leadership positions, in power, in the unions. And it also promotes equity and empowerment. Female leaders serve as role models, empowering more women to step into leadership roles with unions and their workplaces. And this helps break down the systemic barriers to leadership for future generations. Women in power help drive broader equity initiatives, including racial and economic justice, which are integral to modern union movements. Not only that, it expands labor influence. Women leaders are often highly effective advocates in public policy and legislative arenas, championing family-friendly workplace laws and broader worker protections. Leaders like Liz Shuler, AFL-CIO, Sarah Nelson, AFA-CWA, and April Verrett, SEIU, have demonstrated how women can lead unions to significant policy victories. Despite their contributions, women still face barriers to leadership in unions, such as underrepresentation in traditionally male-dominated industries, gender bias, and a lack of mentorship opportunities. Addressing these challenges requires effective efforts such as leadership development programs, mentorship initiatives, and structural changes within unions. By elevating more women into leadership roles, unions not only reflect the diversity of their membership, but also enhance their ability to champion the rights and needs of all workers. The Communication Workers of America has a strong tradition of promoting gender equity and empowering women within the labor movement. Women in leadership roles and initiatives to amplify women's voices have been integral to CWA's work. And yes, I took the opportunity to call out a few of our women in power in our union. Women leaders are playing a pivotal role in national unions, transforming the labor movement to be more inclusive and dynamic. Our own Amina Salaam, CWA Secretary Treasurer, has emerged as a pivotal leader in fostering unity and addressing division within labor movements. During the Legislative and Political Conference, she led the panel Fighting Back Against Attempts to Divide Us, focusing on issues affecting marginalized communities, including women, and emphasizing the importance of solidarity and inclusive organizing strategies. Our very own Yolanda Pearson, Executive Vice President of CWA Local 3204 and the National Women's Committee Representative for District 3, exemplifies grassroots leadership. She was recognized by AFL-CIO during Women's History Month. She has worked extensively to promote social justice, labor rights, and equity. And Yolanda also serves as the president of the Atlanta chapter of the A. Philip Randolph Institute and holds roles in various community and labor organizations. And I know somebody else will want to talk about somebody else that we all know and we all pull on and we all report to. And that's Miss Angie Wells. And I know that all of us can talk about Angie Wells because Angie is our CWA's Director of Human Rights, Education, and Health and Safety. She has played a prominent role in advancing initiatives that promote inclusivity and leadership among unrepresented groups. Her work includes active participation in programs such as the Minority Leadership Institute, MLI, which celebrated its 40th anniversary in 2023, its 41st in 2024. This program is designed to enhance skills like public speaking and organizing and legislative advocacy among CWA leaders from diverse backgrounds. And in her role, she has led various initiatives such as organizing the 2024 CWA Human Rights Conference, which focused on addressing issues like systemic racism, workplace accessibility, and inclusion. She also serves as the chair of the CWA Executive Board Diversity Committee, working to advance diversity and equity within the union. Angie is no stranger to hard work. She's held senior roles in advocacy organizations like the Democracy Initiative, and has a background in government service in Texas under Governors Mark White and Ann Richards. She is a Bachelor of Science in Social Work from the University of Texas at Austin and is known for her commitment to labor rights and social justice issues. The Women's Committee within CWA is also actively involved in promoting gender equity and leadership opportunities, equipping members with tools to mobilize and engage in local activism. Training programs such as Fight Forward emphasize building collective power to adjust workplace issues and societal challenges. These efforts highlight the significant impact of women leaders in fostering a more equitable and inclusive environment within union and beyond. And I know we're running out of time, but there are women in power in unions everywhere. Liz Shuler, April Verry, Becky Pringle, Bunny Castillo, Keturah Johnson, and Sarah Nelson. These leaders represent a broader trend of increasing diversity in union leadership, with women and especially women of color driving membership growth and spearheading critical challenges in workplace standards. However, challenges still remain, particularly ensuring gender parity in male-dominated fields and union leadership roles. You're listening to Communication Workers of America Human Rights, Our Power, a Justice Field Hour of Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power right here on KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM.
And Errol, I just need to jump in really quick because, like you said, I brought this to you. And I just feel like right now in this climate and in this place that we're in this country, it's important to understand how any gender can be powerful and any gender can be good at something. And that's just something that I think that we all need to consider, is that there is no role that is gender specific. So that's something I want to highlight. And again, we're running out of time today, but we'll come back to this tomorrow. But I just want everybody to just to digest that there is no role that is gender specific.
You are correct.
And I wanted to say happy birthday to Timia, who's not going to be here. Who's all gone now, but her birthday is in 2 days. So happy birthday, Timia.
And happy birthday, Timia. And I was not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to make a change, to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small. And by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. and the all-new 106.5 FM, kyokradio.org. Go out and make a difference. See you next week.